Good. So as to the matter at hand, compassion. Anybody ever hear that word? Yeah, it's a wonderful word. And it's certainly in our tradition. We say our practice has two wings, wing of wisdom, wings of compassion, love, etc. So we're cultivating, you know, and obviously the metaphor is, of course, a bird with one wing cannot fly, right? So we want to be cultivating both wings. And so, you know, in our meditation, in our mindfulness, in our insight practices, in our cultivation of wisdom about how things really are, you know, that's the wisdom side, right? And the compassion side is, you know, again, actually, Buddhist traditions, they don't traditionally in Asia delineate heart and mind like we do. We talk about our mind and our heart like they're two different things. But traditionally, I mean, it's just one thing. It's a heart mind. And it's something that exists both within body mind. So there are these practices, we might say, of the heart, which really have a lot to do with how we relate. Right? So the cultivation of wisdom and insight and understanding is often something that very much goes on within our own mind, right? Through our practice, through our study, we develop greater understanding of what's going on. But yet, unless we live alone, you know, in a cave or on an island, we relate to people, right? And so we want to be able to relate to people from a good place. And a good place, of course, is in Buddhism, is a place of loving kindness, caring, friendliness, right? Taking joy in the joy of others, and compassion. Very important, because it's compassion is a very, you know, one can want people to be happy. In Buddhism, that's called metta. That's really love, you know. I want you to be happy, right? And I want to support your happiness, other people's happiness, the world's happiness. Compassion is different. Often the liking, the loving, the warmth that we feel with other beings, the friendliness toward beings, is what connects us, right? It's kind of the connecting energy. But then we notice people suffer, right? People suffer. We notice that we suffer, or have suffered, or still suffer. We notice the people around us, the people we love, the people we care about, they have sufferings in their life. And we, you know, we look around our neighborhoods, our world, and we see lots of suffering, right? So compassion in Buddhism is very essential because it involves much more than empathy. See, many people in the face of suffering, they have an empathic response, which is what? I feel your suffering. Is that good? That's wonderful, right? It's you know, coming out of your sense of separateness and isolation and just focus on me, it's good to notice empathically the suffering. It's good to note, I mean, it's also very good to essentially notice the, you know, having empathy for oneself, connecting to one's own suffering and acknowledging one's own suffering. And yet the word karuna, which means compassion in Buddhism, goes beyond that. It is a desire to alleviate, remediate the suffering of others. It is an active principle, right? It's not a passive, it's not just empathy, it doesn't stop there, right? So, does everybody in here ever feel empathy for others in their life? Yeah. Right? Have we ever, with that empathic connection, try to act in a what we would call a compassionate way, which means trying to alleviate, remediate the suffering of another person, or even ourselves, right? Has anybody ever done that? It's not uncommon. So this is where the problem is. Empathy, this sounds a little crude. I hear the words coming up. You know, I was about to say, empathy is a no-brainer, right? You know, I mean, if one is open, not totally lost in one's own self-absorbed bubble, but if one is open and is present to what's going on around one, one will notice that people are suffering. Someone's in pain, someone's hurt, someone's sad, someone's down, someone's angry, someone's, all those kinds of things. You know, you pick up your you know, you read your forgive me, I'm about to say, you know, you read your daily newspaper, but that dates me, doesn't it? You know, you access the news of the world every day, every hour, and it's a catalog of what? The suffering of the world. You know, where are people suffering today? Right? If you think about it, that's a lot. I mean, all variations on a theme, you know, all kinds of suffering, right? But basically, it's a catalog of human suffering. You know, and which suffering the people who make the decisions have decided, you know, they want to capture our attention with today. So again, empathy for others' suffering, while it's certainly better than being self-absorbed and walled off, is certainly a connecting. But Buddhism says, the Buddha says, no, that's not really compassion. Compassion is wanting to do something to alleviate that suffering. What's the problem? Has anybody ever tried to alleviate the suffering of another person? And what's happened? What? Always works? What? I mean, you just kind of works. Anybody ever tried to alleviate a social ill? What happened? Is it gone? What? No. What's going on here? Right? We're empathic. We see suffering. We act. And it seems to have no effect, or it has very temporary effect. Or sometimes it can make situations worse. Have you ever noticed that? It can make it worse, both on a personal scale and on a worldwide scale. You know, if you look at our country's foreign policy, you know, we've been all over the world thinking we're doing what? Good. And we've dislocated so many societies, caused so many problems, right? You know, stepping into another country, another world. You know, thinking we're doing good, social aid, all kinds of things is a history of well-meaning people not seeing the consequences of their actions. But today we're going to keep it more personal. But I think it acts out on a world. So, so there was a teacher in the 70s, Trungpa Rinpoche, and he coined a word called idiot compassion. And I found out by doing a little research, he stole it from somebody. He's usually the one who's, this is not a, you know, I'm not a muckraker, but it was interesting. There was a really unusual Russian teacher by the name of Gurdjieff. I don't know if you've ever heard of him from a long time ago. He was a very unusual, well, he wasn't a Buddhist. He was just his own, man. But he was the first one to talk about idiot compassion to his people. He was very strong. And so that's what I want to talk about, because I think there is a significant difference between wise compassion, intelligent compassion, and idiot compassion. I would say another word, I mean, idiot compassion, ooh, we don't like that one. But maybe another thing is sort of blind compassion, You know, compassion that doesn't see, right? That may be helpful, or just unwise compassion, unhelpful compassion, blind compassion. It's very interesting in traditional kind of Buddhist iconography, the image, the symbol, the manifestation of the compassionate mind is the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, the one who hears the cries of the world. And it's very interesting in a lot of the representations of her, him, her, the hand is up to help. And if you look closely at a lot of the statues, you will see in each hand, there is an eye. What is that eye? It's the eye of wisdom. The eye of discernment. You know, Avalokiteshvara is not just a bleeding heart. It's not all flowers and sentiment, which we often mistake for compassion. Avalokiteshvara has many arms to help, many ways of helping, but each of those hands has the eyes of wisdom, intelligence, discernment, right? So before he, she acts, it's a good assessment of how to help. So I found an interesting, something that might help us. This is an old Sutta Sutra. These are the purported original words of the Buddha, and a lot of them are interactions. They were recorded during his time, a lot of them by his cousin Ananda, who we would say today had a photographic memory and was his attendant, so he was there for all these interactions. So the Buddha is having an interaction with a prince called Abhaya. And actually the dialogue was interesting because actually Abhaya, Prince Abhaya, was trying to set the Buddha up because he was actually the student of a rival teacher. And his teacher had kind of fed him some lines to kind of catch the Buddha. Because the Buddha couldn't be caught. Anyhow, but I won't go into that. That's another whole drama, all right? So, and I've just taken a piece of it out that I thought was germane today. So the prince says, Lord, you know, don't forget, these are feudal times, right? So a lot of the way, when you read the old sutras, a lot of the way the Buddha's address sounds very feudal, the way, you know, the way somebody would address their lord or their king or their prince. So it has a lot of that kind of stuff. So he says, Lord, with the Tathagata, which was just a Sanskrit appellation for the Buddha, say words that are unendearing and disagreeable to others. He's actually trying to catch them because he's really going to say next, but you know, but if you want to help somebody, might you say that something? So show him that his teaching is not. But anyway, what the Buddha says very, very intelligently, Prince, there is no categorical yes or no answer to that. Right? Now, he's saying that because, you know, the Buddha always talks about right speech, right? Endearing speech, agreeable speech, you know, right speech. And he's saying now, would you ever say words that are unendearing and disagreeable to others? And the Buddha says, yes and no. Okay. Now at that time, the prince had his baby son lying face up on his lap. So the Buddha said to the prince, what do you think, prince? If this young boy, through your own negligence or that of the nurse, were to take a stick or a piece of gravel into its mouth, what would you do? Prince says, I would take it out, Lord. And if I couldn't get it out right away, then holding its head in my left hand and crooking a finger in my right, I would take it out, even if it meant drawing my son's blood. Why? Because I have compassion for the suffering of my son. So, you know, parable, story, often ways are more powerful than words, you know, usual. You know, so you know, the Buddha's, you know, rather than answering him first, he just shows him, right? Would you walk around, you know, just always sticking your finger in your son's mouth and hurting him? Well, of course you wouldn't. But if he was suffering, and if you thought that could be helpful, would you do it? And the prince says, what? Of course I would, immediately. So the Buddha is now going to, then the Buddha says, in the same way, prince, and then the Buddha goes through these kind of categories. I'll go through them quickly. In case of words that the Buddha knows to be unfactual, untrue, unbeneficial, unendearing, disagreeable to others, he never says that. Okay, so he says, these are the categories, never say words like that. But in the case of words that the Buddha knows to be factual, true, but are unbeneficial, unendearing, and disagreeable to others, he doesn't say them. Okay? Is that clear? So sometimes we know something's true, but we don't say it. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Because you know it's going to make things worse, it's not helpful, it's not appropriate. He doesn't say that. In the case of words that the Buddha knows to be factual, true, and beneficial, right? Beneficial to the person, but unendearing and disagreeable to them. We know those words, right? They don't want to hear this. They're not going to be happy. He has a sense of proper time for saying them. This is very important, right? This is what I want to talk about today. And then I'll go on to a few more cases. But I mean, so we're talking about, is compassion always nice? See, we get confused. Is compassion always nice, always soft, always gentle? Is it all bunny rabbits? You see? And we'll talk about, you know, he has a sense of proper time for saying them. So even so, when you know that you need to say to some you need to say something to somebody. Everybody think about it a moment, all right? When you know there's something I need to say to this person, because I think it will be beneficial to them. And as far as I know, you know, they're true. I mean, there are things that they're doing or have done, you know? Okay, I need to say them to. The Buddha says, okay, yeah. Saying these may not endear them to me. Saying them may not be disagreeable to them at all. They may not like hearing them at all. So I wait for the proper time, right? So can you see intelligence, discernment, wisdom, right? One has to know, you know? One has to get out of oneself before one speaks and really go, all right, this is the person I want to talk to. Are they going to want to hear this? Is this going to make them happy? Might they get angry? Might they act, you know, right, to me? Maybe, yeah. Okay, but yet I feel they will be beneficial to them, right? Remember, we want to be helpful. We want to alleviate people's suffering, right? So the Buddha says there has to be a sense of the proper time. And that may not be just, you know, is it better to do it first thing in the morning or later in the day? Okay, I mean, that's one sense of time. But, you know, is this the right time? Now, this is often difficult for us, but that means what? We have to keep our mouth shut. Anybody ever find it not that easy to keep their mouth shut when there's something they really want to say to somebody? Okay, just spend a moment, close your eyes and think, have that ever happened? We have this kind of energy. You know, and that energy to say and to act and to do is coming from where? From me. It's my energy, right? It's my need to say something. Wrong, right? Remember? We want to help the other person. That's why we're saying it. So idiot compassion or blind compassion is, it's coming from me. I have a need to say something. It's not really coming from a real assessment of who the person is, how best to help them, and is this what would be the best time. So that's why we're beginning to understand that acting compassionately, which means effectively, we often have to what? Pause. Take time. Reflect before we act. In the case of words that the Buddha knows to be unfactual, untrue, unbeneficial, but endearing and agreeable to others, he does not say them. All those people, right? We would, you know, it's called what? Codependency? Anybody ever hear that word? You know, codependent. Yeah. Ooh, I always want to be endearing and agreeable to these people. I always want them to like me. I don't want to make any waves. Anybody ever hear that with themselves? Don't want to make any waves here. Even though I know something's going on, even when I know I'm not speaking the truth, right? Now again, in the earlier one, he said you don't say it because it's not the right time. But here he's saying it, we don't say it because we don't want to make what? We don't want to make waves. We don't want anybody not to like us. We definitely don't want anybody to be angry at us. Anybody know that one? Who don't like people being angry at me? Mm-mm. I want people to see me as what? How do we like people to see us? Especially those of you who think you're a nice person. How do you like people to see you? What? I'm nice. I'm compassionate. I'm loving. I'm always, right? See, we don't want to blow our cover. Do we? We don't want to really let people know what's going on inside our minds. We put on a nice mask. Again, it's good to have a societal, civil kind of mask. Yeah, it's probably better than always going around telling everybody what you think of them and let them have it. You know, we're not advocating that, but. Yeah, we know that we're not speaking the truth. And we know by not speaking the truth, what we're saying is really not helping them, right? Because we want to help them, remember? But I want to be endeared and I want to be agreeable. Very important. So our action in the world in this way is all about who? Me. Me, 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 me. Right? And yet, compassion is based on what? Wanting to alleviate the suffering of another being. So a lot of times, we think we're acting compassionately, but we're really just working from our own dramas, our own self-concepts, our own fears, right? He or she does not say that. In the case of words that the Tathagata knows to be factual, true, unbeneficial, but endearing and agreeable, he does not say them. So again, here, they're all variations. I don't know if you could read this and you'll find out. You know something's true, you know it's factual, but I don't say it because it's not going to be beneficial to them. I just don't say it. In the case of words that the Buddha knows to be factual, true, beneficial, and endearing and agreeable to others, he has a sense of proper time for saying them. So again, timing, right? In the more traditional Buddhist teachings on compassion action, we talk about two things, appropriateness and skillfulness. Right, which is sort of implied here. Right? Appropriateness means is whatever I'm going to do or say appropriate for the person, for the situation, right? That's kind of general. Now, once you might say, yeah, this is an appropriate intervention that could be helpful for this person. That's only the first half. The second half is, in Sanskrit, it's called upaya, skillfulness. Skillful means, you know. So this is like the art of compassion, you know. I sort of know something's got to be done, something's got to be said. I think it's appropriate that I'm the one to do that. Now, how can I do it in a way that is effective? That's skillful. And you see, that's another whole set, right? You know, we may have got the first set, but then skill. So let me give you some advice. Has anybody ever developed a skill in life? Any kind of skill? Somebody's raising their hand. Did you do it perfectly the first time? That's how you developed the skill. You just had it?
No.
You practice. You ever screw up? What?
Plenty.
He screwed up plenty. Okay. And yet over time, the first time you tried and you screwed up big time, you didn't give up, right? Yeah, you looked at, you know, what you did wrong. You tried to figure it out. So the next time you would be a little more skillful, right? I mean, this is, so he's agreeing with that. So this is the same, right? So we have to be, and this is scary for a lot of people, we have to be willing to learn. And if you've ever learned anything, there is something called a learning curve. Anybody ever hear of a learning curve? We all know the word learning curve. And the learning curve is made up of what? Mistakes. I mean, there's no other way. You know, lots of times people are saying, well, when I just get the right amount of intelligence and discernment and wisdom, then I will act. Well, again, you still may not have skillfulness. Skillfulness is in the doing. And that's where things get messy, right? Everybody know what I'm talking about? Human beings are messy, right? And when you get into their stuff, things can get really messy. Is that true? All right. So you have to be willing, right? Your intention is the best. That's important. Buddhism, intention, you know. This is not about me at all. I want to help this person by alleviating their suffering. Helping them see something that seems to me be very factual and true, but they don't see it. Or do something or not do something, right? So I have to be willing, you know, in my wisdom and intelligence, discernment, to act. And if it blows up in your face, then what? You've learned something. What? You've learned something, okay? And it's, you know, they may get angry. They may not see you as the little sweet rabbit anymore. All cuddly and kind and, you know. But, you know, I think if you stay and you let them know that you're saying this because you really care about them, you know, and you can always apologize for your unskillfulness, right? I mean, we don't have to be perfect, right? You know, I thought I was helping. Sorry, you know, it's obviously didn't help. All right. So in the case of words that the Buddha knows to be factual, true, beneficial, endearing, and agreeable to others, he again has a sense of proper time for saying that. And then the Buddha says, why is that? Because the Buddha has compassion for living beings. That's the modus operandi for why we act. Now, so let me just talk a little bit about this idiot compassion, this blind compassion, this compassion that has no intelligence, or little intelligence, or some intelligence but not a lot of skillfulness. There are many people in the face of suffering . A lot of times these days, people go on and on about the suffering of the world, which is only something they know through media. You know, it's not a present moment reality. So it's just something they're, you know, and again, every day there's always something, and they get flooded with these kind of bad feelings, sad, angry, scared. And they don't like those feelings. They're kind of heavy. They're overwhelming. So they want to discharge them. And how do they discharge them? By doing something, saying something, talking about it, right? Somehow talking about it gets it out. But talking about it is not compassion, because you're really not helping anyone, and you're really doing it really for yourself, because you don't like the way it feels in the presence of another's suffering. And whether that's the suffering of the world or that's the suffering of another being, right? Oftentimes, in the presence of suffering, or even in the presence of our own suffering, there is great uncomfortability that we don't know how to handle, we don't know how to work with. And so we can wall off. That's one good strategy. We can wall off. That's not really what we want. We want to be compassionate and empathic people. Or they act out. Talk, they do something. And oftentimes the doing in the face of someone else's suffering or my own suffering may not be very useful or helpful. So that's a lot of the times why we say, when I look at it, it really wasn't helpful. Because oftentimes we didn't take the time to be with what was going on, to look more deeply into the cause of suffering. What is the cause of suffering? You know, yesterday, I think some of you were there, we had a workshop on Buddhist psychology. Some of you were there? Yes, some of you were there. Wow, 2 days in a row, you're gluttons for punishment. Eh? And one of the things I talked about, you know, was the Buddhist Four Noble Truths. Right? When the Buddha saw that underneath all the good things in life, there was these levels of suffering, which he became very apparent, he looked deeply into cause before he acted. Right? He spent 6 years just introspecting, learning, what is the cause of human suffering, right? There are a lot of obvious sufferings, aren't there? A lot of obvious pains that human beings go through, violence and war and famine and poverty and, and illness and sickness. You know what I mean? There are all kinds of very obvious sufferings that are just, part of life, right? Death can be suffering for people. Birth can be suffering for women, right? All kinds of sufferings. So the Buddha looked more deeply. what's underneath this? Because even when these things aren't going on, right? Like let's take, you know, our country, right? It's not to say there isn't poverty, inequality, you know, but basically, you know, for most people, there's just life, right? They get up, they go to work, certain degree of stability in life, you know, things basically work, right? It's not like other places, right? So basically, in terms of lots of other parts of the world, we would say, yeah, things are pretty good here, aren't they? For most people, a lot of people. And yet, great suffering, right? Great suffering, right? Massive rates of depression, anxiety, suicide, addictions. I'm not trying to be miserable, but you see, like, why is that? See, if I thought that we, by getting rid of the social ills, the obvious sufferings in the world, people will be happy, then what's going on here? Right? I mean, why do people who have kind of have, you know, enough of the basic things of life, shelter, and da-da-da, you know, have their cable TV, and, you know, can afford Netflix, and, right, you know, right, have a car that works, you know, why do they suffer? See, what's, you know, I mean, this was 2,600 years ago, you know, what's the cause of that, right? And why, even when people are among other people, do they feel alone? Why do they feel disconnected from other people? You know, so this is like even a deeper level. The suffering of that, the suffering of disconnection, the suffering of aloneness, even in the midst of people and activity, right? The ennui and we, you know, that comes into people's minds, even as they go through all the, you know, the accumulations, and they have, you know what I'm saying, all the things of life and moving up the, whatever you're moving up. Why, at a certain level, you know, it's like when the music stops, why don't they feel good? You see, so these are the kind of questions. So the Buddha, in his looking into human suffering, he looked deeply, okay, to really get at the cause. Before he prescribed, you know, a plan of action. This is important that we understand. So it's very important, you know, that we really look into, is a lot of my compassionate action driven from my own neuroses, my own need to help, my own need to be seen a certain way, my own need to discharge uncomfortable feelings. And I could, you know, go on with the list, right, of other things that are driving us to act in a seeming compassionate way, and yet is often ineffective, right? Or just a Band-Aid, right? And that's very important. It's also for us, you know. I mean, this could sound not too nice. You know, there's a lot of, you know, people, I hear people, I remember there was a woman, she was in one of my classes, it was an ongoing class, and she never did the work, you know what I mean? She never did the work, you know. Come next week. Oh no, I didn't have time to read. You know, I don't know how to do it. No, you know. And then one day I kind of called her on. She said, I'm learning to be compassionate to myself. I don't want to put pressure on myself. It's like, what? I mean, can you believe it? You know, I'm being, you know, it's like, okay, you still can't be in the class anymore, but you know, that's fine. You know, because you signed up and this is the work in the class. So sometimes, you know, self-compassion, I think these days often can be kind of just a soft kind of thing, I mean, do I believe that self-compassion for oneself and to wanting to alleviate one's suffering is essential? Yes, it's the basic of Buddhism. We want to alleviate our suffering. But a lot of these kind of little soft things about being nice to myself may be like little band-aids, right? And again, it doesn't mean band-aids aren't, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you got a little cut, band-aid is good. But if you got a wound that's bleeding, you want a kind of treatment at a little deeper level. So I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have got into that. Just, I listen to people and I go, sounds nice, you know, sounds very sweet, sounds very nice. I'm glad you're taking better care of yourself and you took yourself to the spa and got a nice massage and you're feeling better. I mean, that's nice. But, you know, what's really going on with you? That doesn't touch it, you see. But who likes to say that, right, to people? Not easy, is it? Right? So is it appropriate? Am I the appropriate one to say it to this person? A lot of times I'm not. I don't touch it. It's wonderful. Right? Is it appropriate? Right? And then if I do have a relationship with a person, I want to help them, can I do it in a skillful way? Is this the right time to say something? How do you see? So you don't just kind of jump right in. Anybody ever kind of jump right in to kind of, you know, help somebody? And you know, duh. Yeah, I get a lot of people going, yes, and then like, oh, it didn't work, right? Yeah, so we have to be careful. You know, concepts like enabling. Everybody know what enabling is, right? Enabling came out of the, you know, the recovery movement, right? Somebody's suffering. They don't have money. I mean, you know, we here on Nebraska Avenue, we run into that, you know, people on the street. You know, they come up to you, and they're very nice. I mean, there's never a problem, you know. You know, can you give me $5? I mean, there's one person, all the time I run into him, can you give me $5, $10 so I can take a bus? You know, I always see him on the street here. I know he's not taking a bus. He wants to get whatever he takes, you know. Because I've sometimes watched them, you know, and again, you give him the money, you know, I haven't eaten, and so-and-so. Now, again, are there people where it's a genuine need? Yes, then we just help them. But lots of people, it's like, so is that helpful, you see? Is that helpful? In a certain way, you might say, well, yeah, I'm just being nice, and who am I to judge? But is that helpful to them by enabling their suffering to continue? You know, and that's kind of an extreme example, right? But so enabling is this whole concept, you know, outwardly you're helping them, but you're helping them to maintain something that is fundamentally dysfunctional or pathological for them, unhealthy for them, right? Anybody ever had teenagers or children who are having difficulty separating and going out on their own, right? What's helpful? What's helpful? Not easy, right? On one hand, you love, you want to help. On the other hand, are you just enabling them to not trust themselves or to not test themselves in life? And I'm just using these as examples, you see? So there's subtleties to the whole thing. Yeah, so enabling is really primarily about our own discomfort in the face of another's suffering. And we just want to do something. And what we often do is not helpful. Yeah, let me stop. Okay, so Tuesday night is going to be True Confession Night. So I invite everybody in the Sangha. We will come together and, you know, in the spirit of the recovery movement, we will all just share openly so we all know we all do it. We've all, you know, we all share that our experiences of when we, you know, genuinely wanted to help somebody, now looking back, we realize You know, it was blind compassion, it was idiot compassion, it wasn't helpful, it made things worse. Right? When I said made things worse, a lot of people were nodding their heads, so yeah, I know that one. Right? Enabling. So I think it's important that we not keep these things a secret. So that's what Tuesday night is going to be. So let me just open this up now. Questions about what's been shared today. I mean, this is not easy because it's, you know, some things are very straight ahead, right? Like I would say, loving kindness is very straight ahead. You know, be kind, be friendly, be open to all beings, you know, without discrimination, right? So that's kind of a across the board, taking joy in the joy of others across the board. It means like, you know, I'm just not happy for them when they're doing things my way. Taking joy, I'm happy for them because they're doing things that make them happy, right? Even though it's not my way. So certain aspects of loving is obvious. Compassion, this is a tough one because, again, it's not empathy. A lot of times in our language, we think to be compassionate is to be empathic, right? I mean, I don't know if it's still talked about, but maybe, and I've talked about in the past, you know, there used to be this thing in the helping professions, compassion fatigue. Do people still talk about that? They do, so okay. And when I heard that, I went, mm-mm. No, compassion is active. It feels good, it's good. Empathy that's not discharged, that's what they're talking about, right? It's empathy fatigue. Because empathy just feels, but it doesn't do anything. So people get burnt out because they're just overwhelmed with endlessly being empathic, right? But compassion, because you're actively doing something to help somebody, whether it fails or not, because we're not attached to outcome, you know, doesn't need to be discharged. It's good. I've done my best, right? I've done my best. I don't control the world. I don't control anybody, right? So I just do my best to be helpful. So what else can I do, right? Questions. So think about what you've heard today. Anything not clear, anything you totally disagree with? Online, just chat it in to Brian in the hall, just raise your hand. So really think about it. This is not dogma. I mean, this is, any questions about how to apply it? Yes. It's more than just one sentence. Yeah. Yeah, just, yeah, why don't you wait? Yeah, just take it in.
Hi. It's a basic scenario we all go through, mm-hmm. is when you have those people in your life who want you just to basically listen to their destructive patterns.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said, you know, the things you had to say. How then do we just stop that completely, or just handle that the best way?
I am not going to tell you what to do, but I will say you're on the right track. So everybody know you have friends, you have colleagues who tell you their sad story, right? Anybody know people like that? Okay. After a couple of times, you go, all right, you being wanting to help, perhaps give some counsel, give some advice. Did you ever think of trying this or doing that? Next time they come in, same story, right? And you realize what? What do you realize, Angela?
They just want me to listen to the story over and over.
They don't want to change. So this is not an unusual story, right? We all know that. Okay. So my sense is, once I get it, you see, you know, I'm trained in empathic listening, right? I mean, I'm a good listener, right? And I can listen to people's suffering, you know, with concern and empathy and all that, right? But if I keep hearing it week after week, year after, you know, it's like, I realize listening to their story does not help them, right? Empathic listening in the short run can be very helpful to people. They're not alone. You know, they can connect with somebody, somebody's listening. We all know that, right? You know, a kind ear, it's very helpful. It's very compassionate, we might say, or empathic. But as we're talking, compassion is wanting to alleviate their suffering. And once you get that they don't want to really change, right? Yeah, my sense is I change the subject. I change the subject. I'll say, anything good happened to you this week? I mean, I'm serious. I do things like that. Tell me something good that's happened in this week. Anything happened, anything you enjoy this week? You see what I'm saying? Because at a certain point, the listening becomes enabling. You are just maintaining the fiction that there's nothing they can do about it. All they can do is what? Complain, whine. Again, many of us have our inner whiner too, right? So that's okay, but at a certain point, it's not helpful. It's not helpful to us, right? So again, to share with somebody you had a hard day or something that happened in your life was hurtful, Yeah, it's good for us to share. But after a point is, it just becomes a reinforcer for something that's not benefiting the person. And we want to help them. So I say, change the subject, decide you don't want to be friendly with this person. Some people just collect people in their life just to listen to them. You ever notice that? They're never really that interested in you. Right? But they're interested in dominating the conversation, just telling you about getting a lot of nods, right? Yeah, so, assess, wise, yeah. Other challenges? Yes,
Joe Perriard from online says, how do you know when the timing is right?
You don't know. Yeah, this is where discernment, wisdom, courage, right? What? Yeah, it's a learning curve, right? It takes, especially, yeah. So you, again, in the face of somebody suffering, somebody you care about, somebody you want to help, if it's not immediately obvious or something, yeah, you reflect. You try to understand their own causes and conditions, right? Wisdom is understanding. What are their causes and conditions? What is supporting this maladaptive behavior or this pain-producing behavior? That to me, right, because we are objective and we are wise, seems so obvious what they should do. Anybody ever feel that self-righteous obviousness of a click? Oh, sure. Okay. Very dangerous to act from that. Yeah, so you just, you do make your own assessment, you look deeply into it, you are courageous, you're willing to say something that might not endear you to them, but because you care about them. I will sometimes, when I'm not sure, I will give an introduction. You may not want to hear this. Or what I'm going to say to you may be difficult to hear. Or you may not like what I'm about to say to you. But, I'm saying it because I care about you. And I can see you're suffering. And I want to help you. And then, so sometimes how you introduce it can maybe prepare them and soften things. But, as I said, this is the area where it gets dicey, because some people you have a relationship with, right, and you can be open in this way, but other people you don't know. Some people incredibly well defended, incredibly well defended. Well, to me, if somebody's well defended, I leave them alone. If that's my assessment, I leave them alone. Because it's not going to be helpful. They're not going to be open. So I don't need, I may have, right? Don't forget, I used to be a therapist for 30 years. Right? So somebody would come in, they'd tell me a little about themselves, they'd give me the presenting problem. I knew immediately what they needed to do. Right? I could have been a one-session therapist. just go home and do this and this and this and change your life and get rid of this person and, you know what I mean, everything will be fine. Why didn't I do that? Because they wouldn't have hurt me. They wouldn't have done it, right? So you've got to, you know, build a relationship, go through time, unpack things a bit. So, you know, that's where the appropriateness and the skillfulness comes in. You know, we may see very clearly, this person is just an endless reactivity from their wounds in childhood, right? You know, but they don't see it, right? You know, I mean, you know, when in the workshop yesterday, I said, you know, one of the things about Buddhist psychology is we understand that all our suffering is processed through our minds. It's not going on out there, and the cause of it is not out there. I mean, that's the basis of Buddhist practice. Most people don't want to hear it because they think the cause of my suffering is what? Is you, or this one, or that one, or the way the world is, or, you know, my parents, or, you see? The cause of our suffering is endlessly outside myself. And if I could only change that or them, then I will be what? Happy or free or at peace or no longer suffering. But that's a cop-out, right? We suffer within our own minds, our own hearts. That's where we suffer. And that is under our ability to heal and transform. The world does not need more wounded people helping, does it? The world needs more healed people, whole people, who can show them another way that comes from their own experience. So I say this to all of us, you know? I mean, this is why we practice. We call our path, for those who are members here, people who come here, you know, we call it, this is the path of healing and transformation. Right? We want to heal ourselves. We want to transform ourselves, transform our hearts, minds, so we really can be of benefit to others, right? Should we end on that? Enough's enough, right? Thank you, everyone.